Okay, so hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of DeFault Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and remote work experts from all around the world. Our guest today is Rajiv Behera, co-founder and CEO at Evry. Rajiv, thanks for joining us today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. So Rajiv, let's start maybe with a quick intro. You've had quite an impressive journey from co-founding Reflective to now leading Evry. So could you share some of the most maybe significant milestones and challenges you have faced along the way?
Yeah, lots of stories starting companies. There have been many different parts of the journey. Lots of them stick out. There's lots of failures, lots of successes. I think just getting those first customers, I think, is kind of one of those things that sticks out for both companies, where you have an idea, you start building it, takes a while to build it, and then you put it out there and you're worried that if anyone will ever want to use it. And the first few customers that you actually convince to try to use it is like one of those like key memorable moments for any startup. And I still remember them very well. the first company to use Reflective was a company called Optimizely. They did A/B testing. And I remember being so nervous releasing it to them. And I actually went to their old hands meeting and I introduced the product and showed them the whole company how to use it. And then they used it and it went well. And I just remember that as like one of those defining moments. I was like, oh, I have something. It's actually adding value. You see customers using it. You see them happy with it. And then same thing with Evry, like my first few customers, getting them on it, having them actually like seeing them use the product and like go to different parts of the product and send payments, create bank accounts, run payroll. It was just like, wow, it's pretty cool to see the vision coming true.
That's awesome. That's awesome. In fact, everyone was one of the first clients for GoGlobe, for my company, with whom we started this recruitment services, providing recruitment services globally. So it was kind of interesting journey. So let's talk about Evry. Evry is designed to manage all back office operations across finance and HR specifically for startups, right? So can you tell us more about the challenge startups face in these areas and how Evry helps address them?
Yeah, so like we talked about earlier, my first startup was called Reflective, and out of that, usually founders come up with their second startup idea while being at the first startup. And a big pain point at Reflective was running my back office. I had no idea what I was doing. I just was trying to build my product and sell my product. And all of a sudden I had to learn about finance, accounting, HR, payroll, benefits, all these things that are just so confusing and so deep to learn about correctly. And there's no good solution for me. I had like seven different systems to do all the back office things. I had to connect them all. I had to take sales calls for each one. And I had no idea what I was buying. Like I was looking at like Gusto versus Zenefits and for payroll, and I didn't know what each one did and how to compare them. I just felt like I was wasting all this time setting up these seven systems and then setting them up incorrectly. And by the time I hired my head of HR and head of finance, I realized they did do everything wrong and they had to fix all of it. So this time I was like, I want to build something that puts everything in one place, because to founder, it's not like finance versus HR. It's just admin work, basically. I want all my admin work in one place, and I want one service person who will help me and answer questions for me, so I don't set everything up incorrectly and just waste time trying to figure out things that I'm probably never going to figure out. So we started Evry, and it's the first all-in-one back office product for startups. So we do bank accounts, corporate cards, bill payments, payroll, benefits, onboarding, accounting, and taxes in one place.
And you, I guess it was in one of your posts or something, you described Evry as a bank for startups with a core differentiator of a sort of corporate treasure that gives a 3% yield, right? So can you elaborate more on this and how it differentiates Every from other maybe banking solutions for startups?
Yeah, so I think our core unique benefit is just having everything together so that it takes like 30 minutes to get all HR, finance, and accounting set up. Within banking, the banking product, our core differentiator is a treasury. And the difference between our treasury and like, say, like a competitor of an online bank is most treasuries that give you yield, they give you like 4.7%, which is great now, but they only insure you up to 500K. And that's not enough for a tech startup that's raised millions of dollars. And after SVB collapse, there's basically a mandate where all of your dollars have to be insured by either FDIC insurance or backed by the government in some way. So like if you're limited to 500K of insurance to earn on money you want to earn interest on, that's a big, big issue. Because if you have like $10 million, you could be earning, what, 500K off of that. And if you can't earn that because it's not in an insured account, that opportunity cost is like 500K. So our treasury is the first like online treasury that is insured into an unlimited amount. And we do that by buying US treasuries, which are 100% backed by the government. And it's something that's very painful for us to do, but it's what most Series C startups do and onwards. And we're just automating that process a little bit so that earlier stage startups can access the same safe assets.
And I guess another differentiator for Every might be your team, right? So you have spoken about this. You've spoken about the importance of creating an A-plus team and the role of, you know, kind of firing in achieving that, right? So can you share more about your approach in building high-performing teams and maintaining that level of excellence?
Yeah. In terms of the excellence, a key thing is you're going to hire a bunch of people. I think the key thing is you have to fire people quickly. And at Reflective, I wasn't able to do that. I wasn't comfortable with that. And what ends up happening is if you don't fire people fast enough, then the overall culture goes from an A set of A players to B players to B minus players kind of thing. And once you have B minus players or B plus players, you're never going to have A players join that often because A players want to join A players. So you never want to get to that stage. So this time I was like, we never want to get to that stage. It's hard to like pull yourself out of having B minus players. So the big thing is just firing. If someone isn't working out, you should know in the first 2 months and you should watch them. And you do have to fire them. But to be able to be comfortable doing that, you have to be able to hire quickly. And actually, that's where you guys actually really helped us. Like, if you feel like you can't hire quick enough, then companies like my last company, Reflective, end up not hiring. Because you're growing and you're like, you can't afford to lose people in their seats, even if they're average. Even if they're like barely average, you need someone to service like the customers you have because you have too much demand. But if you can't hire fast enough, it's a big opportunity cost to like let an average person go, even like a C player. So the only way to actually feel comfortable and why we decided to hire abroad and not just in San Francisco is that I realized to be able to be comfortable firing people so that we could only keep the A players, we had to be able to be confident we could rehire quickly. And we can't do that in the SF market. It takes a long time to hire B players on average. All the A players in the San Francisco market in engineering get picked up by the FANG companies or pre-IPO companies who offer like double or triple the salary. So you end up just hiring B players max and a lot of B and C player engineers in SF. So I think the key thing is finding like a set of recruiters or a recruiter like Go Globally who can like give you the power where you can manage your team correctly.
Yeah, let's talk about this a bit more. So, as someone who has built an organization of 250, I guess, employees at Reflective, right? So, what would you say are the key considerations for tech companies when they are looking to expand their teams globally?
I think the key thing is you have to have good processes. And so if you don't have a good process, hiring anyone remote is hard to do, even in the US. And if they're outside the US, it's almost the same as if they're in the US, if they're in the same time zone. So it's like, that's why we picked LATAM for our hiring. So like Texas versus LATAM is the same to us. Right, like we can get we it's the same like criteria of like if our company has enough process, we can hire remotely either in Texas or in Mexico, right? Before we'd be comfortable hiring in like somewhere like India, which is where Reflective had like a 50 person engineering office, you need even better processes because like those people aren't working at the same time of day as you, so like you're on a different schedule, you can barely communicate with them. So then you have to have a handoff at night. There's no communication at that handoff, and you have to hope they keep going without any communication during the workday. So I see it as like two tiers. Like you have to have like a small level of processes for a like remote team in the US or LATAM, and then a lot of process for like a group outside of the US time zones or wherever your company is.
And maybe you have some other criteria in terms of choosing a specific country to hire. You mentioned that LATAM, it is close, it is within the same time zone, basically. But are there any other criteria that you had, like maybe any specific checklist?
Yeah, so communication is the key thing. So even certain countries in LATAM, we find that people don't speak English as well. And I wish I could communicate well in their language, but I can't, and I can't learn it. So then it just doesn't work very well. But there's certain countries in LATAM where people just they speak really well and really good English, and that makes it so that it doesn't even feel, I can't even tell that they're not in the US when I talk to them. And that's kind of what I look for, someone who like I can communicate with. If there's a communication barrier and you're remote, it doesn't work. No matter how good the developer is, it's usually hard to make that work. So communication is key. Communication is number one. Skill level is number two. By law of generalities, like I find certain types of devs are better or easier to find in certain areas. So I'm finding it's easier to find front-end developers in LATAM. I'm finding it's easier to find back-end developers in India. So like certain areas just have different like talent pools. But either way, the key thing is, you know, time zone and can they speak fluently and communicate well. And part of communication isn't just the language, it's they communicate. They tell you what they need, they tell you what they're blocked on, they talk to you when they need to in a clear, concise way. So I think those are the key criteria.
Got it, got it. And you've previously mentioned this, mentioned the importance of back channeling during the hiring process, right? Can you share more about this approach and how it has helped you build successful teams for both Reflective and Everi?
Yeah, so at Reflective, I realized when you do hire like a VP level person, you go through an executive search firm and they back channel. They do like five, six back channels. And what I learned from those back channels is that you learn more from the back channel than the interview. Everyone, like lots of people, can learn how to interview. It's a skill. It's like different than your job skill. So someone can be really bad at what they do, but it'd be a great interviewer. And they might get a job over someone who's really good at what they do, but is a bad interviewer. So interviewing is just a skill. And so you can never expect to get it right, which is why what I said earlier, it would be comfortable firing people. So I found with like my execs that reflected the best way to, the most information I really got was through a back channel. And The back channels would just, you just look them up on LinkedIn, find who they worked with, try to find their manager, some peers, talk to them, and see what people actually thought about their actual work. There's, without doing that, you have no idea what their work ethic is. They can say, yeah, I work really hard. I'm going to work 40 hours, 50 hours a week for you, and then not, right? You can say anything you want in an interview. So that's why it's so hard to interview. People are not honest in their interviews. They have no incentive to be. So the only way to get the honest answers is the back channel.
That's true. And speaking about talent, what advice can you give tech talent who are based maybe outside of the US, who are based maybe in LATAM or in India, right? And how they can be hired in such companies as Avery?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think kind of exhibiting the values that I talked about and being proactive about them. So targeting yourself for specific stage companies. So for example, if you want to go for earlier stage companies, you have to show them that you're a product-oriented, communicative engineer. So like you're good at communication, you ask the right questions, it's a two-way dialogue. I can tell from those interviews that you're trying to understand something about the company first, and you're asking the right questions to like get to your, to do your diligence on us. And that's super helpful because then I can see how you think a little bit and see if you can communicate to get what you want from me and the information you want from me. So communication, and then also just culturally showing that you're like bringing up clear examples of like why you're a good fit for the company. And if it's an early stage company, you kind of want to talk about other early stage features or products. It could be at a mature company, but a new product there or a new feature there. Somewhere where you were the sole owner, or like you and one other person were like the key owners, and like how you drove those to completion. The hardest thing to do with like for an interviewer like me is to figure out what you actually did. What's on your resume? What did you actually do there? And so like the people who can like really dig in and tell me what they actually did, I usually ask them things like, oh, what was the org chart look like? Who else worked on this project? Because typically people will be like, oh, I ran blah, 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 X company. And you ask them, they're like, there's 50 people on that project and they're one of the 50 people and they had no ownership over it. So like try to figure out like what they do. So like if you're on the other side of that, you want to find the right examples where you did have ownership and you did create an impact, and then communicate that very clearly. And then also like make sure that like you show that you have a lot of pride in your work, and you work because you want to build really great products.
Yeah, that's a very good advice. Rajiv, on your LinkedIn profile, you're described as a second-time founder who offers advice to first-time entrepreneurs, right? First-time founders. So with that in mind, I would like to hear your perspective on the current market, right? So in a time of this, let's call it economic downturn, right? How can startups maybe cut their costs without compromising on their growth or product quality? Can you give any advice on that?
Yeah, I think part of it is making sure you have the team of A players, right? So headcount's always gonna be your biggest cost. So the answer is always gonna be about like your headcount. And so what I like to do is first make sure that I'm only working on super critical stuff. If I'm not, that means I have too much engineering headcount. So make sure you have the right size team. And then at the next level is just how much am I getting out of every engineer? Are there some engineers that are like actually not producing that much? If you look over the last 2 months, am I really getting much out of them? Are these moving tickets around the board, or are they actually like driving features to completion that users, like your customers, are using? If you look at it that way, it's actually pretty simple to see. You can say, oh, this person's been working on this like set of features and nothing's gone live yet, kind of thing. So like basically you want to make sure you right size your team to the right size, but then also make sure that you're paying attention to anyone who's not contributing, and then just hire. It's a good job market, right? Because there's less hiring happening. So you shouldn't stick with any BC players. You should kind of like upgrade your team as much as you can.
And from your perspective, can this global first approach in terms of hiring help in this regard?
It can. I think you look everywhere, right? But like, mm-hmm. it's all about the flow. Where do you get the flow from? I think the biggest competitive advantage for global first is like the cost, right? Mm-hmm. Like Bay Area engineers are very expensive and almost not. It's hard to make the map work unless they're a really good engineer. Like A players are worth it. Are worth it. No one else is, honestly. And that's what I saw at my last startup. It's just hard to get a bunch of A players. They all get picked off. So it's actually very hard to scale. Unless you can just recruit people who are passionate about your problem and your company, or once you become a super fast growing startup, that all changes. You can hire like better people. Earlier stage, if you're a series like A company, it's really key just to like figure out where you get flow from, good people from. And the Bay Area is just overly competitive. So if you're in the Bay Area, yeah, global like always makes sense, honestly, I think. I didn't even think about hiring anyone in SF. At my last company, I did the same thing. I had an indie office as well. And they did more than my US office. And that was enough for me to start this company with not even a US office. Just like straight up starting with developers abroad.
Got it. And probably my last question. Can you share with us any future plans or developments that we can look forward to from Every?
Yeah. So we're excited to, I think the cool thing about Every is we're the only company really built for founders. So we build this whole vision is to make the founder's life easier, not the head of HR, not the head of finance, the founder. So what we're excited about is launching a founder rewards program, which will be kind of the first of its kind for tech companies, where if you're the founder, all the rewards go to you personally. So like the cashback rewards that anyone spends money at your company go straight to you, because that's how it should be. But if there's a lot, founders need a lot of support. They work really hard. They burn themselves out. My goal is to reward them for that. So we're going to be the first company that has kind of built a rewards program directly for founders.
That's awesome. I guess we're good. So thanks a lot, Rajiv, for sharing your insights on international hiring, its challenges and obstacles on growth during economic downturns. So we wish you and Every all the best in your journey. Thank you for your time today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.